Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert Baer, who is a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
It's good to be back.
And a lot of your career in the CIA as an operations officer in the Middle East was spent in Lebanon working against Hezbollah. So you certainly know that organization. And it does seem to be somewhat under siege in as much as it's taken a stance in support of Syria, where most of its, apparently a lot of its arms are hidden. And the Israelis recently went after some of those arms that were allegedly about to be transported into Lebanon. They've had a foot-to-war with Israel. And in general, I believe their situation in Syria is impacting them in terms of their political standing in Lebanon. But at the same time, they are the most powerful group in Lebanon. And that, I take it, is one of the reasons why the European countries are reluctant to designate them a terrorist organization, as the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has called for following the Bulgarian report that implicated Hezbollah as the authors of the bombing of a bus that killed a group of Israeli tourists in Bulgaria.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. You know, Hezbollah over the years has become a fairly legitimate organization. I say fairly because obviously if they were behind Burgos, they're not legitimate entirely. But they have taken over, they have ministerial portfolios, they have followers in key positions in the intelligence service, the police. You could even interpret this, and some do, is they're the de facto state. I mean, they stymied the Hariri investigation. They got the Lebanese not to cooperate with it. They, even the president of Lebanon and the prime minister will not touch the Hariri investigation when they were probably behind Hariri's murder. So they are not just a terrorist group that happens to be in Lebanon. They are a major player. They will decide whether Lebanon reverts back to what it was in the 80s, you know, chaotic, the source of terrorism, worldwide terrorism. So I'm sure this came as a huge disappointment to the Europeans that Hezbollah was named in Burgos. And I think another important point, as we have to understand, is that Hezbollah is not like Al-Qaeda, where a franchise can attack an energy facility in Algeria, and you don't really know who was behind it. Maybe it was the people who did it. Maybe it was higher up. Maybe it was Zawahiri, the leader of Al-Qaeda. You just don't know. It doesn't matter. But with the Shia, and in particular Hezbollah, they need a finding, a fatwa, that approves an attack like this, especially in a neutral country like Bulgaria. So how far this goes up, I don't know. But if we take the past as any indicator, it would have gone all the way up the Iranian state to Khamenei.
So, in other words, the supreme leader of Iran might well have authorized this bombing of this busload of Israeli tourists in Bulgaria.
There's a distinct possibility that occurred. And frankly, I had a theory that the Iranians were becoming a more responsible state, and so was Hezbollah. And I even wrote a book about it, and that they're coming around. They're getting over this period of taking the American embassy over and, you know, bombing certain, you know, the Marines and the rest of them. They've reverted to what they used to be. You have multiple attacks in India, in Azerbaijan, and the rest of them. There are just so many of them that there's somebody colluding at a very high level in Tehran. Is the Iranian state falling apart? We know it's divided between the president, supreme leader. I can't tell you. It's opaque. But these attacks are not being taken out, you know, by ground soldiers on their own initiative. It's just not the way the system works.
And, of course, there was a number of years ago the bombing in Argentina, which was attributed to Hezbollah acting at the behest of Iran. and I guess Hezbollah is Iran's proxy. What is that relationship then between the Revolutionary Guard Corps and the Quds and the Iranian elite and Hezbollah? Do they always use Hezbollah, or do they conduct a lot of these attacks on what would be soft targets, meaning ones that you wouldn't normally expect in the Middle East, like in places like as far away as Argentina and Paraguay, and in this case, Bulgaria?
Oh, I think it's clearly that Iran had a hand in Buenos Aires, both attacks there. And what precipitated it was Israel's assassination of Hezbollah's Secretary General, Abbas Mousawi. Hezbollah had been trying to get out of the business of attacking civilian targets, but in retribution, they went over a target opportunity, which was Buenos Aires. That was, you know, right up the line, that was approved, just like Khobar Towers was in 96. That was done by a branch of Hezbollah in Saudi Arabia. Again, those people were trained in Lebanon with the approval of the Quds Force. There were Quds Force people in touch with the Khobar barracks attackers. It's the Quds Force which reports directly to the IRGC and then to Khamenei. It's directly under his control. Not in the inside, it isn't just telling you the way it works. It's a very hierarchical organization, and people follow orders.
But you also said, Robert Baer, that there is a religious component to it, that in the Shia branch of Islam, that you have to, in effect, ask for permission from a religious figure in order to conduct a terrorist act.
Oh, absolutely. Look, if you're a Sunni, and, you know, it's very ecumenical in the sense that you and I could read the Quran and interpret what we wanted, and we could launch jihad, the two of us, without any sort of authority. But in Shia Islam, you have to refer to an imam or an ayatollah for any big decisions, to go to war, to launch a jihad. It just cannot be done at a low level. And I've yet to see Hezbollah ever. I've seen him a couple times, Hezbollah people, go out and operate on their own, and they were immediately punished. In one case, one of their lieutenants of the Quds Force went out and kidnapped two children, and he was immediately executed. I mean, he was a fairly senior officer. He'd done it for money and without authority.
So, again, I'm speaking with Robert Baer, who is a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East and countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, and we're talking about the finding of the Bulgarian investigation into the bombing of a tourist bus that killed Israeli tourists. The Bulgarians have pinned this on Hezbollah. This has prompted the Israeli prime minister to call for the European authorities to designate Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, and the United States, of course, has weighed in. And you don't think, though, that the European leaders are going to want to go all that way, even though there's quite a bit of pressure on them to do so?
Well, they've always been reluctant to take the same strong line with Iran as we have. They look at this as another confrontation in the Middle East, one that's not can't be won. There's a lot of close connections between Europe and Lebanon. And if you go after Hezbollah, you have to go after Lebanon. You know, how strong the proof is connecting it to Hezbollah, you know, I'm an agnostic on that.
Right, but weren't you involved with the United Nations inquiry into the killing of Harari?
It's absolutely clear that there was connections of people in Hezbollah that killed Hariri. The UN did not make this up. This was not, there was no influence from either Israel or the United States on their finding. It was just based on solid evidence. And in this case, it's telephone analysis. You cannot fabricate this. Hezbollah said this stuff was, the Israelis got into the phone system, into the billing, made up these numbers, so forth. You can't do that. It's just, you know, once you get into telephone databases, it's sort of infinite regression. It would take a million people, a million years to create all these phone calls to frame somebody. It's just silly. I think any expert who understands this. So that hasn't been explained, or why Lebanon has not. I mean, they haven't helped with the Hariri investigation. They haven't sent witnesses. The witness list was published in the newspapers. for the trial. It's coming up this March. Hezbollah, of course, has denied it. The person who supposedly was behind the assassination himself was assassinated in 2008, presumably because he'd made a couple mistakes. I don't know. Maybe the Israelis did it. They claim it, you know, indirectly in the press. But the point is, we're all looking at this as based on higher authority. And the real question, is Iran at war with the West in some shadow war? Is it in retaliation for the Israelis killing nuclear scientists in Tehran using the MEK? It's the way it looks.
Why did they go after Israelis and not Americans? They make no bones about the fact that they're at war with Israel, do they?
Well, exactly. I mean, they know the Americans didn't kill those people in Tehran, so it was the Israelis, and the Israelis have all but admitted it, that they've conducted assassinations in Tehran. I mean, they've just it's undoubtedly the way it happened. So the Iranians, they work on the system an eye for an eye, and they came after Israeli terrorists. And I'm just outlining the plausibility of this case. I'm not going to comment on the evidence,
right.
But yes. I think the Iranians understand this, and they will retaliate. It's just as if, look, back in 2007, U.S. forces captured, was it 2006, it doesn't matter, captured five Iranians from the IRGC. Immediately, Iran turned around, used its proxies to execute five American soldiers at Karbala. It was an eye for an eye. It is no coincidence that there were five Iranians taken hostage by Americans, and that five American soldiers were killed. That's the way they play the game. Always have, and I can't see them changing.
So again, Robert Baer, veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon, is the author of three New York Times bestsellers. Just to the spycraft questions here that have come out of this Bulgarian report blaming Hezbollah for the bombing of the bus that killed Israeli tourists. Apparently, some of the suspects involved had been living in Lebanon for years, one with a Canadian passport and the other one with an Australian passport. Now, I recall when the Israelis were involved in assassinating a Palestinian figure, in the Gulf, some of them were on Canadian passports and a bunch of other passports. And then, of course, in Jordan, there was an assassination attempt that the assassins were caught with Canadian passports. And I believe in that case that Netanyahu was forced to hand over the antidote to the poison that they'd used. It blew up so much. So what's going on here that both the Israelis and now Hezbollah are using Canadian and Australian passports?
Well, it's a neutral nationality. I mean, you know, people don't give a second look to Australians or Canadians, or Dutch passports. And I could go on. A lot of these places, you don't need visas to get in with them. There are a lot of Lebanese, for instance, or Israelis that are dual nationals. There's a lot of Canadians and Australians that actually go serve in the Israeli army and retain their Canadian or Australian passports. You know, at the end of their service, they go home. Even this country, coming in this country with a Canadian passport, no one looks twice at it. It's you don't want to draw attention to yourself. People do look at American passports, or they do look at Arab passports, or they do look at Israeli passports. And so going for a Canadian passport is very simple. And, you know, it's like these days, you know, you either take a real passport or you forge one. Forgeries are difficult, but I'm sure the Israelis are completely capable of it, just as Hezbollah is capable of altering a real Canadian passport to change the identity. So this doesn't surprise me at all.
So if Iran, acting through Hezbollah, is playing this eye for an eye in terms of killing Israelis because the Israelis killed atomic scientists in Tehran and they're looking for a soft target and they happen to find some people in Bulgaria, and if this is the way the game is played, What's going to happen now that the Israelis just blew up a convoy, apparently with SA-17 advanced Soviet ground-to-air missiles? And, you know, obviously there have been reports of chemical weapons being transferred to Hezbollah. I imagine that's a serious red line, and it hasn't happened, but it might happen. What is the situation?
Well, oddly, the Iranians have a sense of justice here, that if they have uniformed officers transporting weapons to use against Israel and the Israelis catch them and kill them, there's almost a, all right, you got us attitude. You know, fine, it's war, this is what happens. But it's when you have civilian scientists in Tehran that are killed that are not combatants that they respond. I say this with a great deal of hesitation because that could change at any minute. I don't think they'll retaliate because retaliation of any, you know, commensurate level would involve putting Hezbollah under attack from Israel again, which they don't want to happen because it's already on thin ice in Lebanon. So, you know, this may all change by early tomorrow morning, but I don't think they'll do anything right now.
But clearly,
again, this could all change. I mean, look, Syria is going down. I mean, the Alawites are right now, I've been talking to them, are talking about setting up a rump state in the mountains on the Mediterranean around Latakia. You've got these Salafi groups, which can't stand the Iranians, are coming in. Iran's, you know, the Shia arc, which we all talked about for so long, is crumbling as we speak. And Hezbollah, without a source of weapons, is going to be simply a minority party in Lebanon. You know, it's going to be irrelevant to the equation. And the Iranians will not like losing the Palestinians either. And if they're cut off from Syria and the rest of the Middle East, that's exactly what they'll lose. That's why Ahmadinejad went to Cairo to keep these bridges to the Arab side of the Middle East. So, I mean, as their influence declines through the Middle East, as economic sanctions set in, when they feel under threat, they tend to become more dangerous. So I think what we have to look for is, their paranoia, if you like, or a real suffering will cause them to lash out. It's always a possibility, and we won't know it until it happens.
Well, of course, just in closing, Robert Baer, the Ahmadinejad in Cairo was reaching out to the Muslim Brotherhood, the Sunni group, of course, and he had shoes thrown at him, which is an insult. So they've got a tough road to hoe, and it all comes down to Syria, which is why the shoe was thrown at him. And it seems to the Iranians and Hezbollah, by extension, are in an impossible situation, and they are going to lose their influence. And so you're suggesting that they're going to strike out more. They seem to be, at least, they've agreed to have talks about their nuclear program. So is that...
Yeah, but the problem is that once we see blood in the water, the tendency in Washington will be to completely go after them, and that's what they're scared. You know, you have to look at it from their side, too, that they cannot, the regime cannot simply surrender. They can't surrender in Damascus and in Washington and everywhere and expect to survive. I don't know what they'll do. Turn the table over. I don't see them surrendering the way they work. There's too much pride. There's too much a sense of injustice in that country. They go on and on. The reason they won't. But you have to look at the Iranians' point of view. The Salafis look at Shia Muslims as people who've fallen away from Islam. There are a lot of Alawites being slaughtered in Syria by Salafis simply because they're Alawites, because they don't believe in the caliphate, and they've fallen away from Islam, which puts them in a much worse position than Christians or Buddhists or anybody else. So this sectarian drift to the Arab Spring is very dangerous. There's nothing we can do about it, but it could get a lot nastier than it already is.
And of course, if the Assads and the Alawites fall in Syria, which seems to be where it's heading, there will be a tremendous repercussions for Iraq. I think Iraq will be more impacted than anywhere else, won't they? The Sunni are already very restive in Iraq, aren't they?
Iraq is coming apart at the seams right now. The Kurds are not getting paid for their oil. They're 17%. Anbar province every single day they wake up and talk about breaking off from Shia Baghdad. Is it going to fall apart tomorrow? I doubt it. But that's the way people are talking. People in the Middle East don't like to admit it, but it goes back to these sectarian divisions, which for us are almost incomprehensible, but for them are very real.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Robert Baer.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Baer, who's a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He's the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story. And we're going to take a brief station break and be talking about the assassination of a secular leftist opposition leader in Tunisia and the secular religious divide erupting both there in Egypt and in Israel.